Hello, everybody. I'm Yakob Dettoni, and this is the FDI podcast. Today, we are going to talk about the new free trade agreement between the United States, Mexico, and Canada, also known as the USMCA. As soon as President Donald Trump rose to power, he made it clear that it would change, if not ditch altogether, NAFTA, which has regulated free trade between the three countries since 1994. In other words, he bullied Mexico and Canada into renegotiating it. Eventually, he pulled it off. The new agreement, the USMCA, is now being ratified by the three countries. An element that went largely overlooked is the major changes that the USMCA introduces with regards to investment protection. The investment protection provisions of NAFTA, as well as other trade and investment treaties, have been cause of much controversy in recent years as the number of arbitration claims raised by foreign investors against host countries has been rapidly growing. These provisions have become a pillar of the global market order as they provide foreign investors with an insurance against risks such as expropriation, discrimination, and political risks. But they've also become a major headache for host countries, which have often felt overridden in their capacity to regulate and judge foreign investment. The USMCA changes the state of things and may become a new paradigm for future trade and investment agreements. The Columbia University New York even referred to it as the new gold standard to enforce investment protection in an article published in January. Its author, Orlando Cabrera, an associate lawyer with law firm Ogal Lowells based in Mexico City, is on the phone with us today. Welcome to the show, Orlando. So tell us why you consider USMCA as the new gold standard for investment protection.
Well, I think the USMCA has a particular standard or particular mechanism to enforce two sets of provisions in order to help states and investors convey the interests. Probably I need to refer a little bit on the background. Currently, states, they are expressing concerns at the Antitrust Working Group 3, and among those many concerns, there is this concern regarding the regulatory chill, which is basically the possibility to limit their sovereign right to regulate morals, environment, health. So states are encountering this concern and this fear because if they pass a regulation against the environment, against the food, against, I don't know, whatever they find suitable for the population, they are going to encounter an upset investor that will start arbitration. So I think this is why the USMCA provides a unique opportunity to address both the interests of the investors and also it helps to solve the concerns of states.
So what are the major changes that are introduced with the USMCA with regard to what you just said?
Yeah. The uniqueness on which the Chapter 14 rests are basically two mechanisms to enforce distinct categories of investments. We have a first category, which I call the general investments, the traditional ones. So these general investors can claim breaches only to national treatment, most favored nation treatment, and expropriation. And regarding most favored nation, it's only at investments post-establishment phase. And then we have a second category of investments, which are called the covered government contracts. These government contracts, they have a broader protection because these provisions allow investors that they have concluded a governmental contract and related activities in the oil and gas, power generation, public telecommunications, public transportation, and certain public infrastructure to claim breaches to the full spectrum, to the full provisions of the treaty. So in addition to the three ones I have already mentioned, we have the minimum standard of treatment, which includes fair and equitable treatment, full protection, indirect expropriation, and some others like transfers, performance requirements, senior management, and so forth. So I think this double scheme or double mechanism to protect investments is the new gold standard.
Okay, so basically we have to make a distinction between general investors and investors that are dealing with the government in host authorities, in this particular case in Mexico or in the U.S., that in particular sectors. oil and gas, in this case, oil and gas, energy, telecommunications, if I'm not mistaken. And for the general investors, which are, I guess, the majority of investors, imagine investors in manufacturing and other major sectors that don't fall under the umbrella of the government contract sectors like oil and gas, energy and telecommunication. So for all these investors, there are main differences from traditional investment protection security, as you were mentioning. For example, they cannot, and correct me if I'm wrong, they cannot raise claim under the so-called fair and equitable treatment provision, right? Which was one of the very controversial provisions of traditional standard investment protection treaties.
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, fair and equitable treatment, these three words, you cannot imagine the amount of case law that has been developed only based on these three words.
Right.
And, experts have said that fair and equitable treatment contains the broadest notions in regards to the rule of law and government regulation. For instance, it contains transparency, legitimate expectations, even denial of justice. So it's very broad, the protection granted by FET or fair and equitable treatment, and limiting investors to certain type of claims and excluding FET, well, it limits the state's risk exposure. So I think it's a way that states can help to solve their regulatory concerns.
Yeah. Another major controversy regarding international arbitration and investor-state protection dispute mechanism resolutions regarded the supremacy of international arbitration over domestic courts. And also in this particular case, the USMCA addresses the issue for general investors, so not for the special protected category, but for general investors, by saying that basically, even when you have a legit claim, before going into international arbitration, you have to exhaust local remedies. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, this is a groundbreaking provision, and it's a complete different standard or a complete different mindset, because traditionally the U.S. and Mexico, they did not negotiate or they did not agree these type of provisions, but now we have seen a different mindset, and yes, USMCA requires to exhaust local remedies for general investments. So investors that they want to claim this type of treaty breaches, they would have first to exhaust for a certain period of time before local courts, and then if they don't have the desired result, they would need to start the international arbitration.
Do you believe that this would deter investors from raising a claim at all?
For sure. I mean, I think investors, they always face a complexity when they try to invest abroad, and of course they need to measure and gauge all their possibilities, and of course they try to see all the options. And of course, local courts are the most immediate option. But having these different standards and requirements, like exhausting local remedies or limiting to certain provisions, for sure, that will certainly decrease the amount of cases against Mexico regarding the traditional investors. So I think that would be a deterrent. And also, I would like to point just a case that it's very well known. It's the famous Philip Morris case against Uruguay.
Mm-hmm.
And probably, as you may recall, Uruguay passed some strict regulation regarding tobacco manufacturing. And basically, the regulation addressed two points. The first point prohibited packaging or variants of cigarettes. So basically, they set a single presentation for tobacco, and this precluded, as I said, the use of different trademarks and the variety of cigarettes. And also they increased their size of the logos, you know, advertising the health warnings and on the surface of the package. So Philip Morris considered that this was against the provisions of the treaty, and they allege treaty breaches under the Switzerland Uruguay VIT. And well, they went to they started this international arbitration against Uruguay, and the arbitral tribunal found that Uruguay was properly using their sovereign right to regulate, and Uruguay was passing a regulation that was aiming at protecting public health. So for this reason, the tribunal did not find any violation to the treaty regarding expropriation. So these type of cases that are questioning the public policies, the right to regulate, the exercise of police powers regarding the environment, food or tobacco, as I said, well, certainly under the new mechanism provided by USMCA, we'll have fewer possibilities or probably no chances to advance a claim under USMCA. So I think the mechanism limits the state's risk exposure to this type of claims.
Yes, yes. Also, we have to remember that Canada opted out this mechanism altogether. So basically, this is the investment protection is something that holds just between the US and Mexico, but Canada decided to opt out. It was one of the options that was left open for each one of the single members of the agreement. But how can it, very last point, Orlando, how can it become a paradigm for other governments? How do you see other governments that are in the process of negotiating investment or trade agreements using or referring to this new model introduced by the USMCA to shape up their negotiations?
Yeah, well, I think I have 2 points to answer your question. The first one refers particularly to Canada. And when Canada came to the negotiations of USMCA, Canada had just concluded the EU-Canada Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement, CETA, which contains a provision to an investment court. Right. So the first thing I see that there is a very blurred future for investment arbitration. Personally, I do not see any clarity regarding the future of what is going to happen. We have this investment court. We have some states that they have withdrawn from the exit conventions, from some VITs, states like Mexico and the U.S. that they continue with the arbitration system. But I think the opportunity or the offer that the USMCA is putting forward, it's because the mechanism provides or addresses, as I said previously, the concerns of states. I mean, on the one hand, you protect the most sensitive sectors, as oil and gas, telecommunications, that traditionally these sectors, they have been surrounded by the political risk. So governments all around the world, they have a concern, but at the same time, investors are exposed to a higher political risk in these sectors. So I guess part of the gold standard is that investors in the most sensitive sectors, they have the opportunity to be protected under the treaty. And at the same time, states, they keep the right to regulate by giving a less important or less restrictive protection to general investments. So just giving 3 standards of protection, they have substantive leeway to exercise their police powers and to pass any other regulations concerning health, environment, and so forth. So for instance, Colombia, which is a state that has important foreign direct investment, may consider to grant a broader protection for oil and mining sectors, and probably to grant a lesser or less important protection to other sectors like financial services, agriculture, manufacturing. And in this way, they can solve the concern, giving a substantive protection to the most sensitive sectors, but at the same time, to have the opportunity to exercise the sovereign right to regulate.
Right, right. So very interesting development. This happens in a few years. We have seen many different developments in the field of investor-state dispute resolution mechanism. For example, one big example was India. That also India sort of like tried to take another road to investment protection and tried to reassert the supremacy or domestic court over international arbitration. They terminated all their bilateral investment treaties a couple of years ago. And now this new model introduced by the USMCA would be interesting to see how not only investors and states react to this, but also the legal industry react to this. But maybe this is all matter for another podcast per se altogether. But Orlando, thank you very much for being with us today. Tell us, where can our listener get in touch with you, read your article, your stories? How can they make connection with you?
Well, I'm very active in social networks. So you can find me either in Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, as Orlando Cabrera or Orlando F. Cabrera. You can find me in any of the social media networks I have said. And also you can contact me by email to orlando.cabrera@hoganlovells.com.
Thank you again, Orlando. Thanks, everybody, for listening. As always, you can find all our podcasts on Acast, iTunes, now also on Spotify, and obviously on fdiintelligence.com/podcast. Until the next time.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.